This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 12th of September 2025. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And joining us this week, we have Richard Stead.
Hello.
The first thing to say is, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. New energy facility opens next to A34. Fears raised over student village, and fire service cuts to be forced through. And the first headline story, please, Daphne.
And the first headline is New Energy Facility Opens Next to A34. A new facility set to power thousands of homes with renewable energy has opened. Acorn Bioenergy launched its first anaerobic digestion, or AD, plant in Winchester on Thursday, September the 4th. Located at Three Maids Hill, the plant converts agricultural residues and waste into biomethane, which supplies renewable gas to the national grid. The facility officially opened at a ribbon-cutting ceremony attended by the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero, City Council leader Martin Todd and partner farmers is now fully operational. Sarah Jones, Minister for Industry, said, "Acorn's development will deliver secure, clean energy for thousands of homes and provide jobs for the local community in Hampshire. Biomethane can play an important role in reducing our reliance on imported fossil fuels, boosting our energy security, and helping us accelerate to net zero." The plant processes 83,600 tonnes of agricultural waste and break crops each year, generating more than 120 gigawatt hours of biomethane, which is enough to meet the heating needs of more than 9,000 homes. By converting farming byproducts, such as slurries, manures, and rotational crops into green energy, the facility is expected to save around 30,000 tonnes of CO annually. This equates to removing 15,000 cars from the road, or planting 1.2 million trees. Mr. Veach said, "We were delighted to launch the Three Maids facility to demonstrate how renewable biogas generation can power homes, strengthen food security, and support the UK's net zero ambitions. Alongside our dozen sites in development, it is a major step towards our ambition to supply 25% of the UK's biomethane." County and City Councillor Jackie Porter, who attended the launch, said, The whole site is now operational, which is really exciting. It's good to see it actually working and to get to see the support they are getting for it. We want to make sure it works really well with the community as well. My hope is that we can use this site with other sites as well to really educate our whole community on the ways in which we can reduce our carbon footprint. The site, situated near a solar farm and in Stavolt's EV superhub off the A34, forms part of Winchester's growing renewable energy cluster. It has created 15 direct jobs and is expected to support up to 50 roles across the engineering, rural and infrastructure sectors. The plant also produces nutrient-rich digestate, a biofertilizer used to improve soil health, which reduces reliance on imported carbon-intensive fertilizers. In addition, the facility generates high-purity green CO for sustainable industrial applications. Nick Rousell of West Stoke Farm, who supplies break crops to the plant, said, "Having farmed at Three Maids Hill previously, we always found the land had limited agricultural value. However, it has strong potential with this new renewable biogas generation facility, which we are now providing feedstock for. Both energy security and food security are massively important to the UK, and partnering with Acorn Bioenergy helps us deliver both." The project offers fixed pricing agreements and lower fertiliser costs through digestate use. It also gives farmers a reliable outlet for break crops, grown as part of sustainable rotations. By producing continuous renewable gas, the Winchester plant complements intermittent sources such as wind and solar, helping to stabilise the UK's energy grid. It also supports the government's aim to quadruple biomethane production by 2030 to 2035. Acorn Bioenergy is currently developing two additional plants in the UK, along with a dedicated gas injection hub. The company was acquired in 2022 by Qualitas Energy, a global investor and developer in renewable energy, energy transition, and sustainable infrastructure.
Fears raised over student village. Flats proposal for 330 students in Winnall. Fears have been raised that a new plan for flats on a Winchester estate could turn the area into a student village. Provision has applied on behalf of Merlion Capital Partners to construct the flats in Winnall, opposite the Royal Mail Depot. The building would house 336 students, with the application also covering the demolition of the existing building, alterations to access, parking, landscaping and associated works. This is the second application to build student accommodation on land west of Winnall Manor Road in recent years. The following one for a 158-bed block of flats in 2022. This previous application received approval in December last year, with conditions requiring subsequent reserved matters approval to address detailed design, landscaping, access and materials before full planning permission could be granted. The site is currently a tool hire business. Sam Feltham, chair of Winnall Forum, who campaigned against the 2022 proposal, voiced his concerns. He said, "My immediate thought is that it is twice as big as the original. It was 158 bed, and now it is 336. That is worrying. It is twice as big. And going on what we previously said, we accommodate a lot of students already. One of my biggest long-term worries is that Winnall Manor Road becomes a student village. With the Cavendish building and the depot, the area behind Winnall Manor Road could be impacted by this. It could be student accommodation creep. That is quite worrying. But local councillor John Tippett-Cooper welcomed the application, arguing that it would relieve pressure on houses in multiple occupation, HMOs, and possibly get them back as family homes.
Heading, fire service cuts to be forced through. Fire service cuts are set to go ahead despite a fire authority decision to delay them. Chief Fire Officer Neil Odin announced the cuts in a video message to Hampshire and Isle of Wight firefighters just days after the fire authority voted on August 29th to postpone the decision. The proposed 1.6 million reduction in frontline funding has sparked concern among firefighters, councillors and the public, who fear it could put lives at risk. Mark Chapman, Regional Secretary for the Fire Brigades Union, Southern Region, said firefighters across Hampshire and Isle of Wight were shocked to receive a Vizio message from the Chief today, announcing that cuts to the service will be forced through. The bulldozing of due process comes less than a week after the Fire Authority voted to delay plans to slash firefighter posts, giving the service more time to push through for the funding desperately needed. In his message to staff, Neil said a letter had been sent to government ministers requesting future funding, but not asking to halt the current cuts. Mark said, firefighters, councillors, members of the public and the fire authority have all made it clear that these cuts threaten public safety. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight is already on the brink, losing further firefighter posts will put lives at greater risk. Senior management of the service have a duty to put public safety first and to do everything in their power to secure these essential resources. Central government must step in and provide the funding so desperately needed. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service has lost one in four firefighters since 2010, and recent inspections show the service is struggling to meet its own emergency response standards. The latest inspection from His Majesty Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services rated the services as inadequate in staffing and skills, requiring improvement in emergency response and resource management. The FBU has urged the service to use its £23.9 million in reserves to cover the shortfall while pressing for more central government funding. Mr. Odin said that it was a decision no chief fire officer wants to make, and added that he had reviewed consultation results and data analysis carefully before his decision. He said no stone has been left unturned and we're looking for ways to close our funding gap. He urged local politicians to take up the case and write to government.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Barrett, Dr. Jeff, died at Branksome Heights Care Home, Bournemouth, on the 26th of August 2025, aged 79 years. Binfield, Alan, died peacefully on the 1st of September 2025. Carr, David Robert Harrison, died peacefully at St Michael's Hospice on the 22nd of August, aged 78 years. Cheevis, Glenn, passed away peacefully on the 31st of August 2025, aged 89 years. Clark, Angela Mary, passed away on the 10th of August 2025, aged 88. Davidson, Derek Ray, formerly of Rawlings Opticians, retired, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 21st of August, 2025. Feuchtwanger Edgar of Dean, near Sparsholt, passed away peacefully at home on the 22nd of August, 2025, aged 100 years. Handbury, Judith, née Patterson, passed away on the 17th of August after a short time in Challoner House in her 83rd year. Harvey, John Leonard, passed away peacefully at Southampton General Hospital on the 8th of August 2025, aged 75 years. Male, Anne Victoria, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 30th of August 2025, aged 77 years. Scallon, David, a prison officer from HMP Winchester, passed away peacefully at West Acre Nursing Home on the 22nd of August 2025, aged 82. Smith, née Knight, Pamela Joan, Pam, sadly passed away on the 19th of August 2025, aged 85 years. Trot, Joyce Margaret, Joy, passed away peacefully at her home in Oslebury on the 1st of September 2025, aged 92. Wait, David, passed away peacefully at home on the 25th of August 2025, aged 90. Wiltshire, Shirley June, née Burns, passed away peacefully on the 20th of August 2025, aged 91. Woolston, Barbara, née Mayton, passed away peacefully on the 26th of August 2025. Webber, Amanda, known as Spud Godley. Amanda Webber of Ampfield passed away peacefully on the 27th of August 2025 at the age of 62. Christian Comment has been written by Nigel Hemming this week. He writes about songs for climbing mountains. Thank you, Daphne.
In the summer of 2018, I spent 4 days with my son walking the coastal path from Exmouth to Chesil Beach. It was a worthwhile experience for several reasons, but most striking was how my relationship with the coast underwent a complete re-evaluation. I have never lived anywhere near the sea, but I realised that in half a century of visits, I had only ever really thought of the coast as being flat. All my life, I had approached the sea in a car down a flat, narrow valley, then stayed a few hours on a flat beach before heading back inland. Walking around the coast gave me a completely new perspective. For the most part, it seemed, the topography of the coast actually involves a whole lot of up and down. Obviously, climbing up is a lot more effort, although the hard work is often rewarded with an inspiring view, except when the hilltops are covered in cloud, as they sadly were for us on the day we climbed Golden Cap. The journey down is less hard work, although you still have to watch your step, but in the valley, you usually get the chance for a cup of tea before setting off again to climb the next hill. Reflecting on this journey recently, it struck me that this experience was not just a big walk, but actually a metaphor for life. The mountaintop experiences are usually worth the effort, but the path up and down has its challenges and can seem relentless. Sometimes, when the weather is bad, it's hard to even see where you're supposed to be going, and you wonder if it's worth it at all. I was reminded about the Songs of Ascent, a collection of 15 psalms with a shared theme of pilgrimage, worship, and trust in God, sung by ancient Israelites as they travelled up to Mount Zion, as they called Jerusalem. In the Bible, mountains are places of significant meetings between God and his people, so this journey represented not just physical travel, but also a spiritual drawing nearer to God. Psalms 120 to 134 form a powerful worship liturgy of preparation for those coming to encounter God. In one of the best known, God's people begin by intentionally lifting their eyes to heaven. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And that's Psalm 121. The collection continues with a range of themes, including joy, trust, mercy, blessing, and unity, and an assurance that the Lord is watching over his people. It ends with a simple invitation to worship and receive. Come, bless the Lord, all you servants of the Lord. Lift up your hands to the holy place. May the Lord bless you from Zion. And that's Psalm 134. Whatever the geography of our lives, we're not usually far from an uphill journey or a potential encounter with God. As in ancient times, the Psalms of Ascent can form a meaningful soundtrack for anyone who finds themselves climbing. And that's from Nigel Hemming, who is Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
And now it's time for this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with Rates for Rats, please?
Yes, and this letter is from Mrs. P. Dollery. At Braxton House, we have a problem with rats. And prior to today, the City Council have got rid of them with no cost to me. Now, we have several rats running around the place, so I called the council to sort out the matter. I could not believe that, because I am a leaseholder, the council stated that I would have to pay £184. What difference does it make if leaseholders or council tenants live side by side in the same block? It appears that because we are leaseholders, who pay extortionate costs each year, we are penalised, whereas council tenants may get this service free. It doesn't make sense. Rats are rats, and I was advised to contact a council tenant for him to report it. Has the world gone mad? Winchester City Council are my landlord and are responsible for the outside of the building and the rats. Why should I be charged for reporting that vermin are running around the grounds? This is taking my money under false pretences, and we have children playing in the block, and rats carry diseases. I live on the third floor, and the rats will affect those living at ground level. So why would this council expect me to pay for what the council is responsible for? And that's from Mrs. P. Dollery, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
The next letter comes from Peter Jacob of Oliver's Battery. Following the recent coverage of bus cuts, there is a significant point about the lack of coordination of it all. On the very day that HCC pulled the funding for the likes of services 46, which is Winchester to North Battersley, and number 61, Winchester to Eastleigh, they make funding available through the bus service improvement plan for the likes of services number 1, Winchester, Chandlersford and Southampton, and 64 between Winchester and Alton. So on the day you can no longer catch a bus from Winchester to Central Eastleigh. You can catch a bus up to every 10 minutes to Chandlersford, up from 15 minutes, 6 buses per hour instead of 4. Would anybody using services really be put off the service if it was only improved to every 12 minutes and the bus per hour and the buses per hour and the buses per hour run a different route from Winchester to Southampton, for example via Central Eastleigh, and some areas that have been left behind like Hiltonbury and Valley Park? There is a pattern in recent years of more buses servicing core routes and other places being abandoned. Some of the core routes have had marketing efforts behind them to drive demand. Blue Star services, service number one, being a prime example. Is there really more demand for a sixth bus per hour from Otterbourne to Winchester or Southampton than there is for one bus an hour from Hiltonbury? Blue Star, Stagecoach et al. Need to play their part and work out how to serve more communities rather than just those that are conveniently situated. Everyone talks about a joined-up transport policy, but Hampshire County Council should join up their own different funds that see them making good services better and patchy services worse, which is self-fulfilling, and use them to review routes and iron out the blatant inequalities in transport provision services throughout neighbouring districts in Hampshire. And that was from Peter Jacob of Compton Way, Oliver's Battery.
And now a short letter from Ian Newbury on the same topic. And it's headed Bus Cuts Petition. I read the piece about bus cuts in the Chronicle with interest. I am one of those calling door to door to door with the petition and am amazed by the support. It is appalling that Stagecoach can give so little notice and that our councillors claim to have had no prior knowledge of this. I have been in touch with Martin Todd, Lucille Thompson and Christopher Westwood, but so far only Todd and Thompson responded. This must be stopped, and we expect councillors to be more proactive in protecting elderly and vulnerable citizens. And that comes from Ian Newbury, West Hill Park, Winchester.
And Jane Harding also writes on the Blue Star number one service. It was so hard to read the articles this week about the removal of bus services around the Winchester area, including Pat Davis's moving article last week and the effect it is having on people without cars. I was then very surprised to learn that the Blue Star number one from Southampton to Winchester has actually increased the number of buses per hour from 4 to 6. One bus every 10 minutes. It is perfect for me living on that route, but it's hard to understand the justification when so many other routes are suffering. And that's from Jane Harding, Backstreet St Cross, Winchester.
The next letter from David Curling of Winchester is headed Church Struggling to Remain Solvent. I fear that John Kine's letter has more to do with nominative determinism than the facts. This is from the Chronicle, August 21st. The reserve policy to which he refers has been approved by auditors, trustees, the Diocese of Winchester and the Charities Commission. The reserve funds are invested to provide an income which is used to meet the cost of worship, payments to charities, and the preservation of two listed buildings. Not unlike a magnificent cathedral, our churches struggle to remain solvent. The Church of St. Thomas and St. Clement was deconsecrated and now provides 9 dwellings. As a consequence, I worship at St. Swithin upon Kingsgate, and it would be a great sadness to me if it were to fall into disrepair again. St. Swithin's was known to be a church in 1148, but was burned in the riots of 1264. It is thought to have remained a place of worship until it became a parish church again in 1539, after the dissolution of the monastery. It fell into disrepair in the 17th century, and it became the home of the porter of Kingsgate and his pigs, but became a parish church again in 1677. It has remained so since that date. Its modest congregation may well not be able to meet the cost of repairs, and I, for one, am grateful to the trustees for their stewardship of its other assets. And that's David Curling, Peninsula Square, Winchester.
And now a letter from Terry Butler on the same sort of theme, headed Not Behaviour of True Christians. Having read John Kynes and John Harding's letters concerning St Lawrence and St Swithin Church, Chronicle August 21 and August 28, I carried out a fact check on the figures included concerning the excess funds being held by the church trustees responsible for this wonderful arched church in the centre of Winchester, much admired by locals and many visitors to the city. I find it difficult to comprehend that the trustees remain dogged in refusing to allocate any of their £600,000, which is twice the amount the Charities Commission deemed necessary to hold, to struggling local charities, in particular those serving homeless persons at a time of increasing homelessness, for example, the Beacon, Emmaus, and Trinity. This is not the behaviour of true Christians, and reminds me of the parable of the Good Samaritan, with the trustees clearly passing by. I, for one, will no longer donate to this much-loved building and its charity. And that's from Terry Butler, Lansdowne Avenue, Winchester.
Mandiaccio has a concern for nature. I have very real concerns about Winchester City Council's supposed commitment to improving nature, sustaining vital ecosystem services, and providing nature-based solutions to combat climate change. We have been advised in the last week by someone called Jake that clearance works are planned for land adjacent to 13 Goldfinch Way, South Wanston, SO213SG, to enable the householder's garden to be extended. I was horrified to learn of this. The householders have already been allowed to clear a sizeable piece of what should have been protected land in proportion to the property's original boundary and incorporate it into their plot. The lack of protection for the strip of land affected means that what was once an area used by local flora and fauna is now being subsumed into an area with plastic grass and no tree or shrub cover. By their lack of action, Winchester City Council has given every indication that it could not care less about the destruction of this little habitat. When the estate was built in the late 1980s, I recall that some land was to remain as tree bush cover in perpetuity. I assume that this is documented somewhere and that agreements were made with the developers as to whom should be responsible for such landscaping. Over the years, it was not pretty, but it did seem to offer sanctuary and sustenance to animals, birds, and insects. When we purchased some land from a previous neighbour, our solicitors insisted that we create a clear boundary. When the residents of number 13 built their extension, they did not have this same sanction applied to them. Therefore, they appear to be taking the opportunity to grab more and more land. Every time they take more land, they then cut branches from adjoining trees, resulting in lopsided trees. as these are now overhanging their ever-expanding plot, rather than the previously landscaped land, clear shrubs, and on it goes. As previous incursions have resulted in no action, I believe that the same situation could recur until the entire area has been absorbed into their garden. I have advised a friend whose home abuts St John Moore Barracks to question vehemently any landscaping protections eventually offered there, as they will almost certainly not be worth the paper that they are written on. I do not believe that any action will be taken, but at least I have made everybody that I possibly can aware of my complete and utter exasperation with the situation. And that letter is from Mandy Accio, Goldfinch Way, South Wanstead.
The next letter from L.J. White of Sparrow Square, Eastleigh, reminds us very much that immigration has a long history. There has been much controversy of late concerning immigrants, but perhaps your readers would appreciate a history lesson. When my parents moved into their now much appreciated council, not social housing in those days, their council house here in 1951, there was a large area of Nissen huts behind the houses on the far side of the square. Being a youngster, the immediate question asked, what are those huts for? They were for Polish refugees from the recent war, was the short answer. After exploring further, another camp was found. Now, where Asta stands, there may have been some local animosity, but generally within a few years, the camps were swept away and the residents assimilated into the town and the children into local schools. Much later, I learned that prior to World War II, this camp had been for Basque refugees from the Spanish Civil War until 1939. Not known to me then, but there was also a further similar camp at Hiltonbury. So in the light of the present day, what paperwork did these refugees, immigrants, need to have at that time? Of course, there was one major difference to present refugees. Walking along the street, unless they were talking, they could be passed without notice, being white-skinned. But of course, now, unfortunately, skin colour is very noticeable. I do not remember the dreaded word racism or similar being mentioned. Going back further into history, many Europeans emigrated to the New World, the USA. What sort of paperwork, if any, did these early immigrants, e.g. the Pilgrim Fathers on the Mayflower, require to be there? Illegal immigrants? As immigrants increased, they were less than welcomed by the ethnic Indian tribes, but firearms soon settled that problem. Of course, later these tribes were displaced from the land they had occupied for centuries and resettled on reservations, probably without any compensation. Many Brits went to Australia and met up with the Aborigines, and again there was some animosity, which I believe existed until the 1950s. Going back even further, countries such as Spain and Portugal conquered parts of Central and South America, wiping out the Aztecs and Incas, reputedly with European illnesses such as flu, etc., or so the history books say. I wonder if this was just a cover story for the deliberate mass annihilation of said natives. Of course, one might say it is payback time for European countries, having colonized and enslaved many of the countries from where these immigrants, refugees, are now coming from. Remember, 40 or so years ago, when Uganda and Idi Amin deported the Indians, originally encouraged to go there by Britain. I wonder if Nigel Farage or other anti-refugee spokespersons have any ancestors who were early immigrants to the USA or elsewhere. And that is by L.J. White of Sparrow Square in Eastleigh.
and now a very short letter with a delightful photograph, and it comes from Patrick McCullough, and he writes, I thought you might like these pictures taken yesterday outside Winchester Cathedral of some happy dinosaurs. They were just some adults out in costumes, but very entertaining, and stopped by lots of people for photos. And the photograph that Patrick McCullough has taken himself is the front of Winchester Cathedral, and there are three adult-sized dinosaurs in dinosaur costume. There's a blue one, a red one, and a purple one. And they've got their great big jaws wide open, tails balancing them at the back, and they look very, very funny. It's a delightful picture. So well done, Patrick McCullough.
And our final letter today comes from George Spencer, and it's about a football club community day. On Saturday, the 13th of September, Winchester City Football Club are holding a community day for their league game at home to Portishead Town. There are a whole host of activities and attractions planned, a live DJ, a skill zone with the Chelsea FC Foundation, a penalty shootout challenge, a raffle, and ice cream in addition to the usual food and drink. Furthermore, entry will be free until 1:15 p.m. If you haven't watched Winchester City before, this is the perfect opportunity to do so, especially if you have children. So get there early and enjoy a day for the whole family. And that's from George Spencer and Steve Road Alton.
Thank you, everyone. Excuse me. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Excuse me. Or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll carry on now with editorial comment, first person, and Belgarum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with Fears Over Creeping Studentification. Richard will read this one. Thank you, Richard.
Once upon a time, Winall was a thriving industrial estate full of factories whose workers as often as not walked or cycled to work from the nearby council houses. Fast forward 50 to 60 years, and most of the factories have gone to be replaced by stores and offices, and many of the council houses and flats have been sold under right to buy, but have subsequently become homes for students. Our front page story reports on the latest plan for the site opposite the Royal Mail Depot at Winall Manor Road. It is for 336 beds for students. Some locals are concerned that too much of the area is being handed over for student use. There are concerns about the loss of homes, noise pollution, and potential parking issues. A ward councillor, John Tippett Cooper, counters with the hope that it will ease the pressure on local homes to be converted into HMOs. These are homes in multiple occupation, which are often let to students. Studentification is not new, the Chronicle has been reporting on the issue for more than a decade. Our concerns remain the same. In this column about the previous 2022 plans for the site, with half the number of beds, we wrote, we may be sleepwalking into a situation where the city comprises students and the wealthy. Have the universities simply become too big? We have three large institutions in the city, the universities, the School of Art, and Sparsholt College. It is the City Council's planning role to balance the competing interests, and as well as being a dormitory for students and commuters to London, Winchester is still a place where business is done and things are made.
Now, excuse me, Khaled Aziz writes about advice to an entrepreneur in first person this week. Here's Daphne.
Who's right? What's the difference between Unite Union leader Sharon Graham and serial entrepreneur Luke Johnson? Ms. Graham has never run a business. Mr. Johnson has run many, including Pizza Express, bane of many parents' lives as their offspring exercise their pester power to secure a highly priced margarita. But say what you like about the priciness of Pizza Express, it's a successful formula based on knowing their market and serving it well. They're good employers too. At least one of our children supplemented her student income at university, putting in a few waitressing shifts a week. The Ding Dong on Radio 4's Today programme on Monday between seasoned businessman and promoted through the ranks trade unionist was depressingly predictable. Johnson accused Graham of being ignorant how businesses work. Predictably, Graham took this as a pejorative and patronising sideswipe. Johnson was blunt. Britain's economic vitality depends on flexibility. More employment laws will throttle growth. Graham was equally direct. Workers have carried the costs of inflation and stagnant wages for too long. With Angela Rayner gone and the subsequent reshuffle, those on the left worry about a watering down of the forthcoming employment rights bill, now wending its way through Parliament. Perception is everything. To business leaders, the bill looks like more bureaucracy in disguise. To unions, it is a promise of influence long denied. Who is right? What matters is the context. The country is in a bind. The last thing we need is more laws. Laws won't solve our economic crisis. The new bill is a grand scheme, but we British are weary of grand schemes. Think HS2. The public mood is sceptical, impatient, but pragmatic. People do not want another load of legislation. They want results. A single mother juggling two jobs will not thank government for more rights unless it brings down her childcare costs and makes just living a decent life easier. A small business owner wants any new law to make employing staff simpler, not harder. In my 45 years in business, I have experienced firsthand just one employment tribunal, involving a single employee in an associated startup business. The employee threatened us with a tribunal alleging discrimination. Our lawyers advised us to pay her £5,000 to go away. We were outraged and decided to call her bluff, as we knew we were innocent of her charges. After 4 days in the tribunal, the judging panel, comprising an employment lawyer, a business person, and a trades unionist, found for us unanimously. We were vindicated, but it cost our time and legal fees approaching £20,000. Defending employers seldom get costs awarded against a losing complainant. Thus does employment law amount to a rogue's charter. Make a fuss, and employers will pay you to go away. That was 20 years ago. Since then, the law has been continually tilting in favour of employees. Under the latest bill, such employee rights kick in from day one of being taken on. It will stifle the prospects of small businesses. Do we really want only large businesses who can afford HR departments to be the sole employers of labour? Monday's Radio 4 exchange still resonates. Luke Johnson warning against shackling business, Sharon Graham demanding justice and fairness. It was a story of government in miniature, torn between ideologues wanting to re-slice a diminishing cake, and those with practical experience of making things happen who, given the chance, could make the cake grow to the benefit of all. Meanwhile, a young man with bags of enthusiasm, experience and energy, to whom I am acting as mentor, wants to pick my brains. His business is burgeoning. He can't handle it all himself. He needs to take on his first employee. My advice? Don't. Until MPs recognise the dire straits we are in, we will continue the race to the bottom, with France our nearest competitor for that doubtful prize. Is that really what we want?
And Nick has the Belgarum article this week. Apparently Michel is rising to the challenge. Nick?
Yes. A leukemia survivor is marking World Bone Marrow Donor Day by climbing 7 of Hampshire's highest hills in 7 days. Michelle Williams of Hook was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia in April 2024 and underwent a life-saving stem cell transplant in February. She will take on a 7 hills for 7 months of life challenge as part of Anthony Nolan's Lifesaver Walk to raise awareness of the urgent need for stem cell donors. Michelle said, "A year ago, I couldn't even make it up the stairs. Now, thanks to my donor, I'm taking on 7 hills in 7 days. Every hill is a celebration of life and a tribute to the 1,400 people whose lives are saved each year by stem cell transplants. Without someone willing to donate, I wouldn't be here." Beginning on September the 13th at St Catherine's Hill in Winchester and finishing on September the 20th, World Bone Marrow Donor Day, with the ascent of Butser Hill, Hampshire's highest point, each climb represents a month Michelle has lived since her transplant. After she was diagnosed, she spent a year in hospital isolation, receiving chemotherapy, blood and platelet transfusions before receiving a stem cell transplant from an anonymous donor found through Anthony Nolan on February the 6th, 2025. And there is a code for donating and it's quite complicated, but I'll just read it. It's raise.ing/n1lwn7rn8qk10.
Thank you very much. Right, now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next few weeks. There seems to be an awful lot of bits and pieces this week, and a lot of them are at the Theatre Royal. So if I mention the Theatre Royal, then just go and contact the Theatre Royal box office for all them. I won't read the details out every time. But first of all, on Sunday the 14th of September, the Byton Fate and Fun Dog Show is on. That's the Byton Village Fate. It's for 1:30 p.m. and family fun with traditional stalls and games. Sounds fun. On Thursday the 18th of September, we've got the Dusty Show for fans of Dusty Springfield. This is at the Theatre Royal, 7:30, an unforgettable evening of wall-to-wall hits and classics spanning the decades of Dusty Springfield's life and music. Then, again, back at the Theatre Royal on Friday the 19th, Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club, the Ronnie Scott's Story. That's at 7:30. The Ronnie Scott's All-Stars return to Winchester with a brand new programme of music celebrating the Ronnie Scott's story. On Sunday the 21st of September, 100 Small Things. This is at 8 o'clock at the Theatre Royal again. And this is a show for people who appreciate the small things in life. A comedy, theatre, spoken word show celebrating the overlooked, the ordinary and the tiny miracles hiding in plain sight. Tickets are only £10 for that. This is very reasonable. Then, we've got a Michaelmas Fair at St Cross Hospital. That is on Saturday, September the 27th. That's all the usual stalls, games and what have you at St Cross Hospital. The Cheswell Railway is a Winchester guided walking tour. That's also on Sunday the 27th at 1:30 p.m. And that's an opportunity to go inside the disused Cheswell Railway tunnel, which could be interesting. The Winchester Comedy Festival's Autumn Gala is on at the Theatre Royal Winchester. That's at 7:30 on Saturday the 27th of September. That's another thing for the Theatre Royal. Then the following day, you've got Babatunde Aleshe. His show is at the Theatre Royal on Sunday the 28th of September. And going forward to Thursday the 2nd of October, The Phantoms, starring Lee Mead, he's joined by former cast members of The Phantom of the Opera in a night combining spectacular vocal performances and tantalising tales. Again, it's at the Theatre Royal. And not the Theatre Royal. This one's at the 1865 down in Southampton in Brunswick Square. It's Sugar Pie Honey Bunch, Hits of the Motown Legends, The Four Tops. And that is on Monday the 6th of October. So there's quite a lot going on. But moving on. Right, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 13th of September, the sun will set at 7:25 p.m. And on Wednesday the 17th of September, the sun will rise at 6:43 a.m. and will set at 7:16 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Richard, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes, this is a story about a country pub to reopen after the villagers saved it. A Hampshire country pub that faced uncertainty has announced its official relaunch after being saved by villagers. The Half Moon and Spread Eagle in Micheldever recently announced its relaunch on social media after it was saved by a group of villagers earlier this year. Despite challenges, a group of lawyers, accountants and business owners have been working since July to get the pub back up to its feet. The village has been responding really well to the challenges we have been making since summer. We have been trying to do it organically and we think we can turn it around. There's been a lot going on behind the scenes work in turning it around and we have been playing with manpower. It has been a real village effort. We have been sticking to our ethos, which is to get using more local suppliers. We are committed to lifting our food offering by providing good pub food. The Free House was left in difficult situation after co-owner Phil Penton announced plans to step back from ownership in October 2024. Resulting in six villagers coming forward to buy his share. The pub remained open during this period to ensure it stayed at the heart of the community. However, the new team continue to work closely with existing staff members to turn it into a place we can all be proud of.
School's £5,000 lucky dip win. A primary school in Winchester won thousands of pounds after a lucky dip event in Tesco Express at the weekend. On Saturday, September the 6th, the High Street store held the Golden Grant event for the first time. As customers entered the store, they were encouraged to pick a token from a bag, with the winning golden token securing the £5,000 grant for the customer's chosen school. Store manager Amy Simpson said, "We are delighted to be hosting Golden Grants this Saturday. When I was told it would be here, I was really excited. I'm so proud to be helping one of our local schools." The manager, who has led the team for 18 months, was joined by customer assistant and shift lead Charlotte Condliffe, who held the sack with the winning token hidden inside. And that's accompanied by a photo of the interior of the Tesco store with a very enlarged gold token being held up by the shop assistants, everyone smiling and looking very pleased. They don't actually tell us which primary school the customer chose, but maybe they didn't know at that time. And maybe we'll hear about it next week.
The Littleton and Hairstock show was a great success, drawing large crowds who enjoyed a fun programme of entertainment, competitions and traditional fete games. From the moment the gates opened on Saturday, September the 6th, the showground was buzzing with excitement. Visitors browsed stalls run by local craftspeople and charities, admired the entries in the horticultural craft and children's competition classes, and cheered on entrance in the ever-popular dog show. Children enjoyed a host of amusements, from classic fete games to rides and hands-on activities, while live music kept the atmosphere festive throughout the afternoon. Local food and drink were also a big attraction, with visitors sampling everything from homemade cakes to freshly prepared street food and locally brewed refreshments. The flower, produce and handicraft competition marquee once again proved a highlight. It showcased a colourful and varied display of homegrown fruit and vegetables, striking floral arrangements, home baking preserves, crafts, children's competitions and many more. Organisers praised the high standards, noting a significant increase in entries from last year, despite the challenges of the hot summer for the plant growers. Chair of the show society, Lisa Fielding, said, "It was wonderful to see so many people enjoying themselves and supporting our annual show. The event is only possible thanks to the hard work and support of our volunteer sponsors and the local community. We're delighted that this year's show was such a success, with profits of this year's show will go to Boaz Winchester Youth Counselling and Home Start Winchester and Districts." The afternoon closed with the raffle draw and the prize-giving ceremony, celebrating the many flower show competition cup winners. A fixture of the village calendar for decades, organisers have already begun planning for next year's event, which will be on Saturday, September the 5th, 2026.
Wingsuit pilot flies into the record books. A Winchester-based wingsuit pilot recently made a record-breaking flight at World Championships. Casey Flay, 30, from Winnall, set a new British record of 98 seconds in time flying at the recent Wingsuit World Championship, a result only ever beaten by one person. Mr. Flay, who is an engineer by trade, began his extreme sport obsession in 2021 after seeing wingsuiters on the Alps, inspiring him to start training. He said, "As soon as I started skydiving, I wanted to be in a wingsuit straight away. It's always what I have wanted to do." "Everyone has been really supportive. Most of my friends do skydiving, but they would never do wingsuiting, as it's another level. When I first started, I was petrified. I thought I was going to die. I suppose you need nerves to keep you sharp, but now I don't see it as scary so I still have to put pressure on myself. Setting the record just made all the training worth it, and representing Winchester and Team GP on the world stage is something I'm incredibly proud of. I hope it can inspire others to chase their own ambitions, whether in sport, adventure or life. It's my life. I'm pretty obsessed by it. For now, in the run-up to British Nationals in October, I'm focusing on building speed, as I've got distance and time. I'm feeling confident about making it to the podium next year, as I'll be training as many days as I can. Mr. Flay represented Team GP in one of the most challenging and unique disciplines in skydiving, achieving not only a personal milestone, but a milestone in the wingsuit community. As his training progresses and he enters more competitions, Mr. Flay hopes to seek out sponsorship, which will allow him to achieve his competition dreams. Performance wingsuiting is an extreme sport that tests pilots based on how fast they can fly horizontally, how far they can fly, and how long they can fly for between a set altitude. It is a solo competition where pilots have allocated lanes in flight and will have three attempts at each discipline, and their best score is recorded. In order for a completed competition, one full round must be completed, which includes one speed run, one distance run, and one time run. And we see a photograph of Mr. Flay in this silver suit. Quite extraordinary. I can't believe how brave he must be.
Getting to grips with modern technology. A tech event aimed at helping older people with modern technology has been hailed a success. Everycare Hants hosted a free tech fest at St Barnabas Church Week in Winchester on Thursday, September the 4th, to help people aged 65 and over build their confidence with modern technology. Attendees were given practical guidance on everyday tasks such as downloading bank statements, resizing photos for bus passes, connecting hearing aids to a phone, online shopping, creating photo libraries, setting up new laptops, accessing bus timetables, using cloud storage, and sending voicemails on WhatsApp. The event was well received by attendees who gave positive feedback and expressed interest in attending future TechFest events. They extended their gratitude to the volunteers and staff who helped to make the event a success. Events like this make such a difference in helping people stay connected with their families and reduce the sense of isolation that can so easily arise in today's busy world. Following the success of this event, Everycare Hants is planning more community activities and Tech Fest sessions. Details of these future events will be announced soon.
Tributes to a historian who escaped the Nazis. A historian who escaped Nazi Germany and became a prominent academic in the UK has died aged 100. Dr. Edgar Feuchtwanger, a child refugee who fled Munich in 1939 and later taught at the University of Southampton for three decades, passed away on August the 22nd. He was born in 1924 to Jewish parents in Munich, where his family lived near Adolf Hitler's flat on Prince Regentenstrasse, and occasionally saw him passing. Dr. Feuchtwanger lived for many years in Dean, near Sparsholt. The funeral will be at St. Stephen's Church in Sparsholt on Thursday the 18th of September at 1:30 p.m. Michael Newman, Chief Executive of the Association of Jewish Refugees, AGR, said, "The AGR pays tribute to Dr. Edgar Feuchtwanger as a distinguished historian and refugee from Nazi Germany, whose life embodied resilience, scholarship, and cultural legacy. The AGR is honoured to have hosted Edgar when he spoke about his life and we are privileged to have preserved his story as part of our Refugee Voices archive. May his memory be a blessing. Dr. Voigtwanger's father was arrested during Kristallnacht and interned at Dachau concentration camp, prompting the family's escape to Britain. Supported by a host family, he won a scholarship to Winchester College before studying at Magdalen College, Cambridge. He taught at the University of Southampton from 1959 to 1989 and published extensively on British and German history, including works on Bismarck, Disraeli and Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. In 2021, he was appointed OBE for services to Anglo-German understanding and history. Dr. Voigtwanger remained one of the longest-serving members of staff in the history department. Marking his 100th birthday on September the 27th last year, he returned to the university to visit an exhibition, University of Southampton, A Place of Refuge, which featured his story. Dr. Voigtwanger said, "Unfortunately, the world is full of conflict, so it is important that there is a place for refugees. The world should be more tolerant and make less people refugees. It's not a nice thing to happen, and my experience was a good one. I felt like I had left an evil empire once I arrived in the UK." Tony Kushner, professor at the University of Southampton's Parkes Institute, who worked with Dr. Voigtwanger, said, "Edgar Voigtwanger's death marks the end of an era. I was extraordinarily lucky to have Edgar as a colleague in the history department at the University of Southampton."
People urged to check their blood pressure. A health campaign is urging people to take a closer look at a hidden risk to their well-being. More than 440,000 people in the southeast of England are estimated to be living with uncontrolled high blood pressure, a potentially life-threatening condition that often goes undetected. The NHS is urging people to get their blood pressure checked during Know Your Numbers Week, raising awareness of the dangers of leaving high blood pressure untreated. Dr. Mohit Sharma, consultant in public health and regional lead for cardiovascular disease prevention, said, "High blood pressure does not usually have any symptoms, so the only way to find out if you have it is to get it checked either by your GP, surgery, a pharmacy, or using a machine at home. Over 50% of heart attacks and strokes are associated with high blood pressure. Lowering your blood pressure by just 10 milligrams of mercury can cut your risk of stroke by over 25%. Changes to lifestyle, eating healthily, maintaining a healthy weight, taking regular exercise, drinking alcohol in moderation, and not smoking can help with this and help people avoid needing medical care for more serious conditions later down the line. A survey by Blood Pressure UK found that 44% of adults in the southeast do not know their current blood pressure reading, and 36% do not check it regularly.
Chronicle Company's record online traffic. NewsQuest, the UK's leading local media group and the owner of the Hampshire Chronicle, has reached a new record in digital audience. Its site saw 61 million unique online visitors in August, reading a record number of articles. The Hampshire Chronicle's website also had record months this summer, attracting more than 1.5 million page views in July and 1.3 million in August. It was also named News Brand of the Year at NewsQuest's recent Excellence Awards. Regional editor Kimberly Barber said, "Our driving reason for being is to serve our communities, and delivering quality, trusted local news every day has built us a loyal audience. For that, we are truly thankful."
Deputy Police Commissioner appointed. A new deputy has been appointed to support policing and crime priorities across the region. Alex Rennie has been named the Deputy Police and Crime Commissioner, DPCC, for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, following approval by the Police and Crime Panel on September the 4th. Mr. Rennie, former leader of Havant Borough Council, will support Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, Donna Jones, in delivering her vision for safer communities. Ms. Jones said, "The appointment of Alex as deputy will ensure the OPCC can continue delivering for Hampshire and Isle of Wight residents as we prepare for the evolving landscape of devolution. He is an excellent position to do that." She described Mr. Rennie as bringing extensive experience in public sector leadership, managing large-scale public sector budgets, working into government and managing policy, particularly in local government. Mr. Rennie led transformation programmes during his time at Havant Borough Council and worked with the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner to secure Safer Streets funding. He has also served as a senior advisor to the Shadow Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury and as Chief of Staff to an MP. Mr. Rennie said, "I am extremely proud to take on this new role in helping support the Police and Crime Commissioner in her efforts to cut crime and make our communities safer. Having worked in the public sector for the past decade, I am passionate about serving the people of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. I share the PCC's vision of making our towns, cities and villages safer places to live, work and visit." He will begin his role later this month.
Air ambulances milestone in base appeal. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has reached a major milestone in its Operation Air Base appeal. The charity is aiming to raise $3.6 million to convert and equip its newly purchased airbase and headquarters near Southampton Airport. The move from its current airbase in Thruxton, Andover, to a more central location in the region will mean its teams of doctors, pilots and paramedics will be able to reach almost every patient in the region within 10 minutes of takeoff, compared to 20 minutes or more time of writing, as we write today. An enormous £240,000 donation from the Monday Charitable Trust has catapulted the charity's appeal total to over £2 million. The milestone has been reached through 8,654 individual donors who have donated to the appeal since it began in September last year. Work is now underway by local construction company Rosewood Construction Services to transport the current building into a purpose-built airbase.
Beauty Salon of the Year winner. The votes are in, and the winner of the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser's Beauty Salon of the Year competition has been revealed as Call of Beauty, based in the 100 Romsey. The popular salon, known for its exceptional service and welcoming atmosphere, secured the top spot after a wave of support from local clients and local residents. With a wide range of treatments and a team of skilled professionals, Call of Beauty has become a firm favourite in the community. The competition, which ran throughout the summer, invited readers to nominate and vote for their favourite beauty salons across the region. Hundreds of votes were cast, highlighting the incredible talent and dedication within Hampshire's beauty industry. Kimberly Barber, regional editor for Hampshire, said, "We've been overwhelmed by the response to this year's competition. It's fantastic to see so many people supporting their local salons. Congratulations to Call of Beauty, and thank you to everyone who took the time to vote. We love celebrating our local businesses and encourage all salons to keep sending us your updates and stories." Call of Beauty will be featured in an upcoming edition, showcasing their team and what makes them stand out.
Review after horse put down at show. Horsford show organisers are launching a full review of veterinary procedures following the death of a horse at this year's event. The death occurred at Tichborne Park on Saturday the 6th of September during a display by Horseboarding UK. Charlie Corbett, chairman of the Horsford and District Agricultural Show, said that the death was caused by a freak accident. He said, "It was most unfortunate that one of the horses taking part in the horse boarding event at the show had to be euthanized following veterinary advice. In a freak accident, which did not involve any other horse or person, the horse sustained an irreparable fracture to its off foreleg. Our deepest condolences have been sent to the connections of the horse." Horseboarding is a sport where a rider on a mountain board is towed by a horse through an obstacle course to achieve the fastest time. A post on the Horseboarding UK Facebook page said, "When a gap opened up in our 2025 calendar for us to return to the Horsford Agricultural Show, we were very excited. As the last time we visited the venue in 2023, it had been one of the best shows of UK season, only upstaged by the O2 Arena in Prague. Two competitions later, where the Blues and Twos won the Horseboarding International Cup. However, halfway through the second rotation, just after the speed trap towards the finish, Sally Optimisticul suddenly came up short, sensing a problem. Rider Amy Richards was out of the saddle before the horse had come to a stop. Ryan jumped off his board and was there to assist. Seconds later, the ground crew were in support. Minutes after that, veterinary personnel from audience arrived, and shortly after that, the vets from the show were on the scene. It was quickly assessed that Sally had suffered an unrecoverable fracture and needed to be euthanized. The Horseboarding UK team automatically and naturally split into two working groups, one assisting Sally, Amy, Ryan and Ty, the other clearing the arena and caring for the other horses, which included Amy's other horse, Indy. Horseboarding UK performed a second show to honour a friend, a team member and a standard bearer for the sport.
Care home rated good, celebrates with party. A Winchester care home has been rated good following a recent inspection. Shawford Springs Care Home, which is part of Barchester Healthcare and received the rating from the Care Quality Commission, the CQC, hosted a garden celebration to mark the achievement. Cassie Munnock, the general manager at Shawford Springs, said, "This good CQC rating is testament to the dedication and heart of our incredible team. Today's joyful celebration reflects the strong, supportive community we've built here at Shawford Springs, and we're so proud to share this moment with our residents and their families." The garden event brought together residents, staff and families for an afternoon of laughter and community spirit. A highlight of the day was a quiz game during which residents outperformed the staff team. As a token of gratitude for their unwavering dedication, all staff members were presented with vouchers to honour their hard work in achieving this CQC milestone.
trained guide dog is cooking on gas. A guide dog puppy that was sponsored by an oven cleaning service has officially graduated. Ralph, a golden retriever Labrador cross, sponsored by Ovenew Winchester, has successfully completed more than 18 months of training and development. Now he has been matched with his new owner, making a life-changing difference as a guide dog. Ralph has grown from a playful pup into a calm, confident and capable guide dog, helping a visually impaired person live more independently. Ralph's trainer, Leonie, said, "Ralph is laid back and genuine, who thrives on praise and is happiest when he knows he's done a good job." She added, "Ralph has already had a massive impact on his new owner's life. They've bonded beautifully and are forming a strong partnership built on trust and teamwork." Ovenew Winchester cleans ovens in the SO21, SO22 and SO23 postcodes, as well as Cheriton, Hursley, Sutton Scotney, Coldham Common and Sparsholt.
And talented Ukrainian musicians on stage. A lunchtime concert showcased talented Ukrainian musicians in Winchester. The event, on August the 29th, was organised by the Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association to mark the memory of defenders who died for their country's independence. 13-year-old Ava Solomonova Satchwell opened with a confidence performance of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Climb Every Mountain, accompanied on the piano by Lilia Solomonova. Lilia then performed Haydn's Sonata in A Major. Young cellist Maharaita Dorosh performed Agetti's Sonata for solo cello, while jazz musician Volodymyr Vasilenko played pieces by composers ranging from Bach to Piazzolla on the accordion. Soprano Katerina Bolkanovich concluded with three dramatic pieces, including Dvorak's Song to the Moon. The concert, held at the United Church in Winchester, supported the Mayor of Winchester's charities and was attended by a large and appreciative audience.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Richard Stead.
Bye-bye.
And for me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.